greetings in Jesus' name. It's been a blessing to be here and enjoy the songs that were sung. Good to be here, good to kind of slow down this morning after having been quite busy all week. Just think about, just really take time to think about God and just our purpose here. Pray, Brother Robert asked us to pray for everyone's business. I caught my attention because it's the thing I thought talk about a little bit this morning. How many of you how many of you know what MYOB stands for? Okay, yeah, it's an acronym, I guess you could call it, that's used to say mind your own business. I suppose probably most of us, I have certainly been told at one time or another, mind your own business. That happened yesterday to you. Probably didn't feel very good, did it? I think most of the time when people say that, it's not in a very nice way. They're rebuffing someone. And yet it's also a good rule to live by. It's also a good thing. It's a little bit of a mystery to me to think about something that is such a good thing, such a beautiful thing, when someone is minding their own business, is also such, seems like such an ugly thing to tell someone to do. I'm just going to read a few scriptures. Oh, well, I don't know if I can talk that loud. Okay, maybe first, let's see, go to First Thessalonians, I should say. Chapter 4. Just going to read verse 9 through 12. But concerning brotherly love, you have no need that I should write to you, for you yourselves are taught by God to love one another. And indeed, you do so toward all the brethren who are in all Macedonia. But we urge you, brethren, that you increase more and more, that you also aspire to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to work with your own hands as we commanded you, that you may walk properly toward those who are outside, and that you may lack nothing. So Paul's encouraging the Thessalonians here as a way of increasing more and more in brotherly love. Among one of the things he says here is that they mind their own business. And I think it's interesting or notable that just before that he talks about that you also aspire to lead a quiet life. I think I've seen and found that they kind of go together a little bit. Minding our own business and leading a quiet life. I have to think about the proverb comes to mind about meddling in another's quarrels, like taking a dog by the ears. I just should say this: I'd encourage people to make mental notes of things to share that would help just bring clarity or round out any thoughts that I share, because I don't intend to speak exhaustively about this. Here, second, in Second Thessalonians, when we think about minding our own business and the aspect of it that that Paul's talking about here, it's about being busybodies in other men's matters. And so in 2 Thessalonians, he talks a little bit more about that. I'll just start reading in verse 11. For we hear that there are some who walk among you in disorderly manner. Maybe I should just say that in the context of this, he's talking about people working, and that they should work to provide for their own means, provide their own bread. And he's talking about how they did that themselves. They worked while they were among them. And so then in verse 11 he says, for we hear that there are some who walk among you in a disorderly manner, not working at all, but are busybodies. Here's another thing that I think just tends to towards busybodiness, is people who are not busy otherwise, people who are not busy with their own business, or busy minding their own business, can more easily tend towards busybodiness. Okay, I'm going to go to I have wrote down here another reference. First Peter. Four. Verse 15. But this is also my translation here uses the word busybody. But let none of you suffer as a murderer, a thief, an evildoer, or as a busybody in other people's matters. So he's saying, I think the context here is saying that suffering for good is commendable, but people who do evil, one of the things mentioned here is as a busybody, also suffer because of that. But he's saying that shouldn't be our case. That shouldn't be why we're suffering. Is because we're an evildoer. Or it mentions busybody in other people's matters. So there's a certain suffering that does come with that. That does come with meddling in other people's matters. But it's not a suffering that is commended, I would say, by Paul. I'm just going to go back into John. Chapter 21, maybe the closest, probably the closest thing that Jesus ever came to telling someone to mind their own business. John chapter 21, I'm just going to start I guess right now I think I'm just going to read start in verse 20. Then Peter turning, I'm just going to go back and start in 15. So when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." "You know that I love you." He said to him, "Feed my lambs." He said to him again a second time, "Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me?" Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep. Most assuredly, I say to you, when you were younger, you girded yourself and walked where you wished, but when you were old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will gird you and carry you where you do not wish." This he spoke, signifying by what death he would glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he said to him, "Follow me." Just something that this is unrelated to what the idea that I was thinking about of minding our own business, but that came to my mind as I was reading this is that Peter said, Peter told him, Jesus, every time he said, "You know that I love you." He said, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And by the third time he was grieved because he asked him, he said, "You know all things." So I believe that that's right. I think Jesus knew that Peter loved him. But I think it wants to show me that it's important, still important for us to verbalize our requests and our thoughts to God, even though he knows things before we even ask him. I think it's good. Anyway, just go on here in verse 20. Then Peter, turning around, saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following, who also had leaned on his breast at the supper and said, "Lord, who is the one who betrayed you?" Peter, seeing him, said to Jesus, "But Lord, what about this man?" Peter was kind of ready to take a little bit of the attention off of himself. Like, why are we just focusing on me here? But what about this man? Jesus said to him, "If I will that he remain till I come, what is that to you? you follow me. I'm going to stop there and then and go to Luke chapter 2. And read starting in verse 41. His parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem according to the custom of the feast. When they had finished the days as they returned, the boy Jesus lingered behind in Jerusalem, and Joseph and his mother did not know it. But supposing him to have been in the company, they went a day's journey and sought him among their relatives and acquaintances. So when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem seeking him. Now so it was that after 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, both listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. So when they saw him, they were amazed, and his mother said to him, "Son, why have you done this to us? Look, your father and I have sought you anxiously." And he said to them, "Why did you seek me? Did you not know that I must be about my father's business?" But they did not understand the statement which he spoke to them. Then he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was subject to them. But his mother kept all these things in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. So, Jesus told his parents here that he had to be about his father's business. And I think I had to think of I think it was at a place I worked, maybe just the kind of people I was around. We would, in fun, if sometimes someone was told to mind your own business, and they replied, like the appropriate response was, "I don't have a business," and so I think going back to John here, where Peter or Jesus is talking to Peter, like he's asking Peter. He told Peter, "Follow me." He told Peter, "Feed my lambs." He told him, "Tend my sheep." So essentially, it would be, I think, better to say, or more appropriate to say, that what Jesus told him essentially was not just mind your own business, but mind your father's business. And I think that's the encouragement that I think we should have for each other, and that I would just want to leave with you, is that you have business to attend to, and it's your father's business. And so I just want to encourage us to mind our own business and to make the father's business our business. And I'll just open it up for any thoughts, questions, or any corrections you might have.
So that passage in John that you read, it's always been one of my favorites. Don't know why, just like, I guess because we're so, as humans, we have this tendency that Peter had of always looking around, well, you know, what about him? You know, what about him? He isn't doing this or that. If we're told to do something, or if we feel like we're led to do something, yet you know, well, but he isn't doing that, you know. Just have that tendency, and here Peter was displaying the same thing, and Jesus just told him, what's that to you? You do what's right. You do what you're supposed to do. You do what I'm asking you to do. Like, don't worry about the other person. And the other thing is, back here in Thessalonians, just the verse after, or right after you stop, where he's encouraging believers to work and to be busy about their doing things to make their own living. Then the verse right after says, brothers and sisters, do not be weary in doing what is right. I think quite often we might take this verse out of there and give it loftier, maybe loftier expectations, or the more give it more of a spiritual turn, or fit it into some other concept more, if that makes any sense. Whereas here he is talking about everyday life and working so that yourself and your family has something to eat and is provided for. And then he goes, you know, right after that and says, brothers and sisters, do not be weary in doing what is right. You know, we've got the most of us older people can probably relate to just the fact of everyday life and working day after day. Like, sometimes it just gets wearisome or boring or so on and so forth. Anyway, it just, hadn't ever struck me that way. I just kept reading when you stopped. I was like, well, that's interesting. Anyway, the Lord add his blessing.
Amen, Brother Norman. Many good thoughts on minding our own business. It's not originally what I'm going to say, but and it's not an absolute. It is not an absolute, but it's not original and absolute. And I'm sure that some of you brothers help me will have better examples or different examples than I'm going to bring up. And I say it that, because, you know, what does Proverbs say? Uh-oh, cloudy day, staying in bed, I'm not going to work. You know, the slothful man. Of course, Proverbs does say, look to the ants, O sluggard, get to work, get a job, get a life, right? You know, be something like that. But someone has said this, that when Jesus called his disciples, of course, he used those two words, right? Javi, what did he say? First words out of Jesus' mouth, basically. Follow me. So we saw Peter and Andrew, what were they doing? They're mending the nets. Follow me. He saw James and John mending the nets. Follow me. He saw Matthew. Matthew's collecting taxes. What did he say, Adelmo? Follow me. He saw Moses herding sheep in the wilderness with a burning bush and a consuming fire. And then he appeared to him. He saw Gideon. What was Gideon doing? Darren? He was threshing wheat, right? Everyone's working, minding their own business, doing a job when he calls them. How about Paul? Paul, you know, Saul of Tarsus. He was doing his business, killing Christians. And God called him. Hey, stop that and do this. Follow me. King Saul. King Saul was looking for his what? His donkeys. And then he was like that. Cornelius. Cornelius was praying. He helped the poor. He was doing all those things. And God said, hey, he's an angel. The Lord be magnified. Let us be diligent in our work, and God will use us more. He can use us too when we're not able to work or things like that. But I think for the most part, the ones he called, Peter, James, John, Paul, they were doing, Matthew, they were doing what they're supposed to do. And let's follow their example. The Lord be magnified.
Yeah, Brother Norman, thank you. I guess I'll just mention this. This might have come up a year and a half ago. Some may remember, I'm pretty sure I've mentioned this before. I don't think it's super significant. It's certainly interesting. But like the first thing if we translate, you know, agapao as love, which is the way it should be translated, that was the question Jesus said, do you love me, to Peter. And Peter's response, he didn't use the word love. He used the word that, he used the, you know, the action, the verb, that is related to the word that means friendship or to have affection for somebody. And it's interesting that Jesus says, do you love me? And Peter didn't say, yes, I love you. He says, yes, I have affection for you, or yes, you're my friend, or something like that. And then Jesus asked him again, using agapao, do you love me? And he responded the same way. The third time, Jesus did not use the word for love. He used the same action word, the same verb that Peter did. He said, do you have affection for me? And then Peter responded back the same way. He never actually said, I love you. But each of those times, it's interesting. The first time, which I think is a good translation, they'll say the word for little lambs, as opposed to he progressively towards the end. The third time, to where it's, you know, my sheep, right? And I don't really have any insight, if anybody does. It's interesting that it changed from lambs, and maybe he was just covering the whole spectrum. You know, the young ones, the older ones, like, I don't know, but it's interesting how Jesus, like, started out with just, you know, feed my little lambs, and progressively to where it's the last one, the third time it was, you know, feed my sheep. But it's interesting, but I'll just mention that.
I think to keep everything into the context of the first scripture read, it's a good thing if we were able to discuss when is it too much, when is it that you're minding another man's business, when should you not try to bring your opinions or insight or your understanding of something because you're overstepping the boundaries of your business. Even though, going back to Cain said, am I my brother's keeper? Is it my business to care for my brother? And I believe the answer would have been yes. But when is it too much? Right. I think I would like to, maybe later or even now, if the brothers could give some opinions on when is it too much, when am I overstepping my boundaries and minding another's business instead of my business.
Yeah, but I wish I knew how to. I wish I could hammer on that the point that Leroy emphasized as well, especially give testimony of the big effect is. Big impact it's had on my life. Not being concerned about. Working on myself, working on my own problems. You know, we often make excuses. We often, or I've often blamed others for my ill behaviors and. If you're dealing with a child and somebody does something wrong and they'll say, well, but they did it first, or somebody else did it, or but they did this to me and that's why I did that. The thing I can easily see that they should be thinking or that they should be doing is not, it doesn't matter what somebody else does. You know, you are in control of you and you need to do right. And they didn't. A bad situation doesn't make you do bad things. It shows you that there are still bad things in you, and we should. When we encounter that, it should just like, whoa, it doesn't. Somebody does something mean to you, and then you behave impatiently. You should forget about that anybody did anything mean to you, and just be broken that you have behaved impatiently. You have spoken unkindly or behaved unkindly. That's your business. I wish I knew how to compel people. Some way to emphasize how big of a deal that is. And then I thought of maybe or maybe along the lines of what Adelmo is saying, as far as an area that I try to figure out what, just I've encountered this thing in life in all kinds of situations, in all kinds of both whether it's spiritual, whether it's secular, children always change a situation. You want to live in community, or it's real easy, a bunch of single adults, but get children involved, and all of a sudden, boom, complications. Like somebody will be talking about something, and I'll be like, there it is again, children. The complication is children. Children are such a big thing that somebody can be behaving a certain way in front of a bunch of adults and looks over and sees a child and like, ooh, alters the way they're talking and the way they're behaving. Like, there's something really a big deal about children. Anyway, as far as being in fellowship, that would be one area. One thing I figured out one time is it's your business how I'm raising my children, because theoretically among us we are all raising each other's in-laws. We're raising our children's spouses. You guys are raising my children's spouses. We're all raising, theoretically, and so it is our business what other people are doing, teaching their children how their children are behaving. If my children and your children are playing, it's my business what your children are talking about, how your children talk. It's your business how my children talk, what my children are doing. In a way that's very different than, what other adults around here are doing may or may not be my business, may or may not be my concern. But you throw the children thing, like, oh, that all of a sudden, like, I gotta protect my children. It's one thing for me to ignore things that adults are doing or thinking, but I have a responsibility to my children. Anyway, that's maybe an example of a way that that I think it's appropriate for us to be involved in each other's lives and open with each other. And that was the thing I wanted to say, with the kind of an obvious implication. If somebody says, mind your own business, like if somebody, let's just say somebody asked me about some part of my life and I say, mind your own business, but I'm basically saying, this isn't, what you're asking about is not your business, which, can be pretty, unfriendly, pretty separatist. And I think especially as brothers and sisters, I think the world is all very separate. Everybody has their own business. And I think as brothers and sisters, there's a much bigger overlap because of the common cause of Christ, because of the common goals and the common warfare. Our business overlaps very much into each other's lives, and other people's lives are our business in a lot of ways.
I'll just be real brief. I appreciated that, Norman, and I too have thoughts along the lines of what Adelmo was sharing. It seems like there are some things that we are specifically supposed to consider others and what they're about. Like, for instance, in Philippians chapter 2, it says, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. So in some ways, we're supposed to consider even more highly ways that we could benefit our brother or help him along, help him in his interests, what his goals are. And yet there is this thing that can happen that I think the passages that Norman was highlighting is dealing with, and that's the hunting up and spreading of gossip is just a very unhealthy thing. It just is bad. There's no necessarily real intention to help or try to remedy a problem, but rather just to hear about others' struggles or trouble. And I think I wish I knew. I wish there was a better way to discern or know I feel like some of those things should involve two willing parties, like perhaps an invitation to help and a willingness to help. If both are not there, if someone is not willing to help or speak into your life and someone is not willing to receive it, I think somehow that's significant. It is a bit of a mystery, and hopefully we can find the balance. Thank you for the message.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Adelmo and Buddy and Max. It just made me think of so many relevant passages, and I use the word passage, but I mean just really themes or concepts that come up throughout the whole Bible that I think are relevant to this this whole sphere of what we're talking about. Which, thank you, Norman, for bringing up, because, yeah, I mean, it's really important. So ultimately, the fulfillment of the law is to care as much about your brother as yourself. And Jesus even illustrated one aspect of that was, hey, you see that? You're pointing out a little speck in someone's eye, but you got a tree in your own eye. So get that tree out of your eye first. Then this is the point of using this passage. Then you can help your brother get the speck out of his eye. It's not get the tree out of your own eye and go off, hey, what's that to you? That's not what Jesus said. He's like, then you can help your brother get the speck out of his eye, right? So we have an obligation to care as much about that cut and scrape and broken bone in your brother, not just going and getting your own mended at the hospital, but also for your brother. And I use that as a metaphor for spiritual things. So where's that line? That's a great question. And then even like Brother Max brought up about the idea of gossip. Like, even to this day, I think it's a fuzzy definition of where's the separation of, like, for instance, if we use the account of Caleb, what was the man that in Joshua that when they went and what's that? No, not that account. It was the account where they went in and plundered and obeyed God to wipe out and all this kind of stuff, some those that God had brought judgment on, and they were commanded, God through Joshua, God through Yeshua, do not take anything. No plunder. Achan, thank you. Thank you so much, brother. Yeah, Achan. So it was Achan's sin, right? Now it's curious, and I think there's just not enough information shared in the text to come to a lot of important conclusions of this that is relevant to what we're talking about. But God brought the discipline or punishment or whatever on the whole of Israel, not just on Achan, right? To some degree. And there's different accounts where this was happening. Point being is seemingly so, is that if somebody knows about something that's going on, they cannot be quiet about it. It must be dealt with, because if not, then God is going to bring judgment on the community, right? And so we see that account one time with David, where David is like, no, don't, on all the people of Israel, no, let it be on me and my father's house, not on all the people. You know, there's that sort of thing. So, and it seems very similar, maybe, to 1 Corinthians 5, I mean, a passage I bring up quite often, where Paul was not only amazed that this man was committing this kind of magnitude of sexual immorality, but he commanded them, turn this man over to, you know, and to expel this man from among you. Now, he talked about and made analogies to, you know, the yeast in the dough and, you know, and all this kind of stuff, and purge the yeast from the dough, be a, you know, kind of thing or whatever. But I think it also points back to this whole idea that is seen in the Old Testament, is that God holds the community responsible for these sorts of things. So going back to the idea of gossip, where's the line? Help me out. if somebody can help me, because I'm just not satisfied with English definitions and dictionaries or whatever. Like, I just don't think there's a clear thing. You cannot, if there's some stuff that's going on, if it's not, just let's just say it this way, because this, you don't have to, like, use the word, well, sin or unrighteous or whatever. No, just in simplicity, because there's different categories. If it is clearly not pleasing to God, it needs to be dealt with. And so if somebody starts talking about it with other people, oh, that's gossip. That's my point. So help me out. Where's that line where we can have conversations, you know, off, you know, after service or something or whatever. But like, where's, or even in a brother's meeting, whatever, whatever's appropriate. Like, where's that line? Where's that line to where, like, well, no, everybody just, you mind your business. You know, it's not your business. Versus, no, like, hey, if it's not going to be pleasing to God, it's all of our business. And I appreciate what Brother Buddy said about the children thing. I mean, that's different, but I mean, it's the total same concept of what we're talking about. So it's interesting the point that he made. He's like, theoretically, possibly, you could be raising the future spouse for my child or something. So yeah. Anyway, so there's some thoughts.
One thought, Brother Dwayne, as someone might know, but is it Sirach or the Book of Wisdom? And they're really strong against gossip. One of those chapters, Dwayne, and one of the brothers who knows the Apocrypha good, they really, really condemn gossip so much more than ever I've heard. Lord be magnified.
Yeah, I don't know if I can help any at all. These are my thoughts. Like when the question is raised of where's the line between, I guess the question is where's the line between what's gossip, slander, and what's loving your brother. And I don't really think that that's what it is. I don't think it's this thing that slowly reaches a point where it crosses the line, and then it's slander. I think they're totally different things. I think busybodies, gossip, and slander are totally different things. They come from a totally different place than from a place of loving your neighbor. Having said that, I would recognize that at times I think one could be mistaken for the other in individual cases, but I think you have to look at a bigger... Sometimes you might have to look at a bigger... So what does a gossip do? They gossip. What does someone who loves their brother do? They love their brother. And I think if you look at a bigger thing than just like this one instance of what was this, and just look at somebody's whole life and their life testimony, I think it would reveal itself, I think, or show us, hopefully, whether we're loving our neighbor by the things we do or loving our brother, or whether we're a gossip. That's my thought. Maybe it doesn't help bring clarity, but that's the way I see it. And just to say, I appreciate all the comments, things that people have shared.